Hello and welcome to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I'm your host, Haya Kamps, and I try to chip away at the question of who we are, why we're all here, and what it all means. If that sounds a little bit vague, then, well, you try coming up with a better description of what this is all about. Notes on a postcard, please. In any case, here's our new deep dive into life, the universe, and everything. Let's roll tape. So welcome to the inaugural episode of the Meaning of Life and Such podcast. For this episode, I'm joined with my wonderful friend, Kate, who I've been running a podcast with that has 30-something episodes, I think, at this point, for the Human Awareness Institute. And so we've spent a bunch of time already talking into microphones at each other. And so I can't think of a better guest to kick this one off than Kate. Kate, where in the world are you and how are you feeling right now?
Hi, Haya. I am in Denver, Colorado, where I live with my partner and our cat and dog. I'm in my bedroom looking out at the sky. We just recently moved and we have beautiful big windows, which we didn't have before. So I'm really relishing that. And I'm feeling a mix of like excited and alive. Like I'm running really fast, but also just tired. Working a lot these days. And so trying to find the balance between doing everything I want to do in the world and also allowing myself to not do it all perfectly.
Yeah. And carving out space for yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I think the first question I would like to ask to my guests on this podcast is kind of a weird one, but I think it helps set the tone a little bit, which is, how do we know each other and what is your first memory of me?
I have a really strong first memory of you. My first time meeting you in person, you were meeting me in downtown San Francisco to help me run a photo shoot, a video shoot, photo and video shoot. You were going to provide the photos for HI, for the Human Awareness Institute. And I think you reached out to me just saying, hey, I want to help. I went to a workshop and I've got some skills. Let me help you. But that first meeting on the street, we were trying to get into the apartment we were going to go up and do this photo shoot in. And you just had this big smile and this big presence. And I thought immediately, oh, yeah, I'm going to like this person. This is great. And then we had a blast throughout the day. We just jumped in really easily together, creating together. And we've been creating ever since.
Yes. Oh, that's a wonderful memory. Thank you. Yeah, I remember not really knowing like what you looked like, but meeting you outside and like it's the chaos. It's the pre kind of photo shoot chaos. Yeah. But yeah, there was definitely something there. I was like, yes, I really look forward to spending an afternoon with this person. And I'm delighted that we've met a bunch of times since and had a chance to build a podcast together.
Yeah, me too. And I hope we're in person again soon. It's been about a year since the pandemic.
It's been too long.
Yeah. Too long.
Yeah. So for this podcast, for this conversation, I'm kind of doing a really bold thing, which is trying to get into the skin of what the meaning of life is. And, I don't expect us to fully solve that in the next 45 minutes. But I love the idea that, you know, it is something that people talk about remarkably rarely, right? The meaning of life is almost a joke. We kind of run on with our everyday lives. And like what could arguably be the most important thing, people don't really think about. But the extension of that is like knowing what the meaning of life is, I think it's closely tied to what the I is. Like who are you as a person, Kate? And where, like what are the edges of you? Where do you end and the rest of the world begin? Have you ever felt into that? Do you know what that is like for you?
I love the way that you just described that. And as I was listening to you, my mind started kind of scanning along, well, what is the meaning of life? And yeah, of course, I've dabbled in that question a little bit, but I love your invitation to take it even more seriously. And my initial response was, well, on some level, it's subjective, right? And then that's kind of where you went with it, which is it's personal to the individual. For me, the first thing that pops up is to love people, to love, to have the biggest, best, deepest, longest experience of love in life. If I can look back on my life and and I increased love in other people's lives, and or I took the time to really enjoy the love that's in my life, I hope that that will feel like a fulfilled life. So that's the first thing that comes to mind for me.
That's beautiful. And so I guess the logical question that comes from that is, what is love? Like, where do you sense that? What is different about somebody you have love for than somebody you do not?
Well, selfishly, love feels good. I feel at peace when I'm in touch with love. I've been doing these daily meditations with Hi for love and acceptance, and I always invite my listeners to just take a moment to breathe love in. And as I'm doing that, I notice my nervous system slows down. I come present. Things that feel very important suddenly feel less important. So for me, love is an energy that we can tap into that is very healing. It's all encompassing. I think it's, we have an instinct of how to resonate with love. And so for me, it's more of a state of being than anything. And I really think that when you cultivate that state of being, who you love and how you love doesn't really matter. It kind of all becomes one thing. It's indistinct who you love and who you don't love, because it becomes less about discernment and more about just generosity of your energy and your life force.
Well, that comes up for me in two ways, right? It is June, it is Pride Month. So the idea of who you love is one thing. But it also really struck me in how you just described love, is that other people and yourself weren't really part of those statements. It was a more general, like more abstracted sense of being. Did I get that right? Is it less about people for you than it is about, like say more.
Yeah, I think exactly right. Like, I'm disinclined to make it about other people's qualities, for example, and more about a state that I choose to inhabit. And especially when we're talking about the meaning of life, for me, if I am cultivating and focusing on love and expressing that loving energy through me and as a part of me, then not only am I healthier and happier and more aligned, but I believe that I also make a greater impact on other people. And so, you know, to be alive is to be, from my perspective, in relationship with the planet, with our own bodies, with other people. And so if the relationship we're cultivating is a loving one, then I'd say that's a pretty good life.
I love that. I recently read a book by Bell Hooks called All About Love. She is a wonderful writer and a ardent feminist, and makes a really interesting point, which is that almost everything that's been written about love has been written by men. And the way she approaches this is partially as like a feminist, like, hey, why are we accepting that men get to run the narrative on what love is and isn't, which I think is a really interesting question. But more importantly, she hugely expands like what it means to love, what it means to be loved, into a broader space. And I don't know if you read that book or not, but I feel like you just touched on the core tenets of it around the it being a state of mind and a state of being rather than something more specific. She also makes the point that love is a verb, right? You choose to love. And I think you just mentioned that as well. And I think it is such a beautiful idea of saying, hey, I'm choosing to feel affection. I'm choosing to feel love for, you know, whether that is the things you are doing, the people in your life, or, you know, life itself in general.
Yeah, I think that's right on. And I haven't read that book, but I'm curious. So I'll ask you to repeat that title when we're done here and I'll look it up. But, you know, I think that the other passion I have in life is psychology. And I think that a lot of times we think that our emotional state or our psychological state is kind of happening to us. And I'm so passionate about the realization and the practice that we can choose the mental state that we're in, you know, and it does take practice. And of course, there's influences of that. And it's natural to have a certain kind of response to, you know, your environment. If you lose someone, of course, you're going to feel grief. But we also have a lot of choice in how we interpret things, the state of mind that we cultivate and practice and live in. And yeah, I think loving awareness is something we can choose.
And so when I abstract that slightly further and ask the question, what is the meaning of life? What I'm hearing you say is it is the act of choosing to be in tune with that love. Is that right?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I mean, of course, there's so many wonderful things to focus on. I think growth and evolution and, you know, intellectual discovery, these things are valuable too. But for me, it's the thing that gives me excitement is focusing on that love energy. Yeah. And, you know, I think that human beings really have an instinctual longing to make a difference of some kind, to have a lasting impact. I was talking recently with my fiance about kind of this human drive to leave something behind, a legacy of some kind, and how that looks for people varies. Some people would love to be famous and be in the history books, and others would really rather not be. But I think we do have this commonality among humanity of wanting to leave something behind. And for me, the thing that feels like the thing I want to leave behind is more love in the world, because, well, for me, it's directly related to quality of life. You know, if you're not enjoying your life, then why be alive, you know? And for me, I'm the happiest when I'm connected to a loving experience of myself and others.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I think where I am trending towards is that for me, that happiness is kind of the ability to love the now. So if I, right now I am not, I don't love the now, then I am not happy. But I think it's an active thing, right? Like if I am unable to love the now, it is because I am stressed, or it's because there's something on my mind, or I'm preoccupied by something. And I feel like joy happens in fleeting moments, right? I can be joyful today or now and sad in a moment. But happiness, you can be sad but happy. Right? That is kind of a more ongoing sense. And I feel like organizing or orienting your life in a way where even when hard shit happens, that you're able to react to it with grace, with resource, with openness. And this is something I've been doing a lot of work with my therapist on as well. And it's the idea of like, how can I have a personal setback, or how can I have a really difficult day, but still at the end of the day, take a deep breath and go, you know what? My life is good. I am happy. And there was definitely not that long ago that I had a place where I absolutely wasn't there, where a bad day would send me for a fucking loop for days. And it's been a while since I've been there, because I feel like I've had a greater sense of balance in my life in general. But I think it goes really closely to what you just said. And I look forward to feeling into this a little bit more later. About like, yeah. What is it to kind of be attuned with, you know, I assume you also have shitty days from time to time.
Of course.
But yeah. that you're still able to kind of be open to feeling that love from the universe around you.
Yeah, I love the connection you're making, Haya, because I think that, you know, the statement, happiness is loving the now, that's beautiful. And I've also heard a version of that, which is the opposite, which is, unhappiness is believing things should be different than they are, right? And so just recently I had an injury during a vacation and I was in so much pain, but at some point I realized that the majority of my discomfort was in believing that this was bad and wrong, that I shouldn't be injured during a vacation, that I was so disappointed that
right only wasn't... be injured in work hours.
Well,
strictly scheduled injuries.
Right, exactly. Well, the sick day from work, not from vacation.
And, right.
But once I realized that I was causing myself the majority of my misery, I could shift and just accept, okay, you know, this is going to look a little differently than I thought it was going to. But where can I still really enjoy the time I have here? Yeah. So I'm in full alignment with you. And I think that, you know, looping it back to love and relationship, I think that one of the places I've grown the most recently in my relationship is really this mantra, this practice of my role in this relationship of loving another human being is simply to love and accept him exactly as he is. It is not my job to change him. It is not my job to shift him. And it's so easy to go there. I think especially women kind of get socialized to fix or change their men, right? But it goes both directions, totally, you know. And so to cultivate this belief system, really, that all I have to do to feel joy is to love you as you are and to love myself as I am, right? Yeah.
And I mean, the high interviewer in me would go to, so how does that intersect with boundaries? Because obviously, I mean, changing somebody, not wanting to change somebody is one thing, but holding your own boundaries is another. Yeah. But that is the high interviewer in me. The meaning of life interviewer in me is like, huh, so how does that look? Like, how do you, like, how does that look like to you when your partner does or wants something that you're not 100% behind? And how are you able to integrate that into that life view?
Mm-hmm. I think because if my partner and I have different needs, we can be in respect of one another and not need to change the other. So for example, I can have a boundary and say no to something that I'm being requested or, you know, being invited to experience or whatever. If I have a boundary and I express my no, that's not the same thing as saying, and you never should have asked me, right? Or I don't like that you asked me, you shouldn't be that kind of person that would, you know, how dare you, right? So there's a distinction between my focusing on myself and meeting my own needs and being clear about the kind of relationship or engagement I want to engage in versus spending my life energy, spending my time focused on the other, focused on how the other is not meeting my expectations or my ideas of how they should be. You know, and making a request of someone is also not the same thing as trying to change them, right?
Absolutely.
That's a mutual engagement where I'm going to respect his yes or no, and asking him to do something for me or to show up in our relationship a certain way is totally appropriate. What's difficult is when I then go into a space of, well, because you said no, or because you didn't meet that need, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And it takes practice. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is really good practice. And when it comes to the meaning of life, I mean, we've mentioned two core tenets here, right? One is love and one is happiness. And I feel like you mentioned, maybe I'm projecting, maybe you didn't mention it in this interview, but you are typically very big in fan of community.
Yeah.
And, you know, close community, both with your partner, but also with your communities around you. I know you're part of some really, you're close to your family, you're close to other communities around you. Does that tie into your purpose in life as well?
For me, absolutely. You know, I just get so much joy out of relating to people and knowing them on a deep level and having that mutual bond that's possible when you're in a community of people who really value mutual support and freedom of expression and love. You know, one of the reasons I love the organization High and the community that High really cultivates is because at the center of that is a loving acceptance, a practice really of being in a loving state. And that just resonates so deeply with who I am. And yeah, I guess for me, you know, I love psychology. I'm interested in biology and neuroscience, and I love to read, and all of these things excite me. I love to garden. But at the end of the day, those things just don't feel like they're as meaningful. You know, we're talking about the meaning of life. For me, what's really fulfilling and meaningful are my relationships. And, you know, at the heart of that is that experience of being known and having a contribution in someone else's life. It just feels like that legacy piece again.
You just mentioned being known. I feel like the way you say that, it means something very specific to you. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I think that I have a bias, which is that I think one of the basic needs of human beings, once we get past the need for shelter and water and all of that, is to be loved and to be known. And I think it's not as easy as it sounds. And I think over time, humans are evolving to the point where they can be more present with one another, be more available to each other's deeper truths. And at least I hope that's where we're evolving to. And
right.
I think that a lot can come from being really deeply known. A lot of peace, a lot of resource and protection against adversity. I think all of that comes from feeling really seen, understood, supported, and being held by your extended community.
When you say kind of protection against adversity,
mm-hmm.
So adversity happens, right? I don't think we can always impact that, but it sounds to me like you're saying something else. Is that resilience? Is that using love as a shield? Or like, how does that show up for you?
Mm. What I mean by protection against adversity is perhaps kind of a clinical way of looking at how we evolve. But what I mean specifically is we know from research that people who experience, I'll give a specific example. So what we know about human beings is that we have our genetics and how our genes unfold, and then we have our social and environmental influences. And they work in tandem pretty much across the board, right? Both our physicality, but also especially our mental health. And so what I mean by protection against adversity is, for example, someone may have a gene that puts them at risk for developing symptoms of PTSD if they experience a traumatic event. There's actually a gene for that that makes you more at risk. But that gene, if it turns on because you've experienced a traumatic event, is half as likely to actually result in symptoms if you are part of a loving community, if you have support. And so, you know, this is true in child development. If you are in an abusive or neglected family and you have a gene for schizophrenia, you're 3 times more likely to actually develop schizophrenia than if you are in a loving family that's safe. So literally, we are protected by having loving relationships. And then let's say you actually do develop PTSD or any other kind of struggle in mental health. We also see that just recovery and coping is just so much more enhanced when we have a direct and clear and loving bond with at least one person, but better if you have more. So I just think it's so important. It's so important on so many levels to have that kind of relationship with other people. Isolation is directly correlated with depression and illness. So I think we're finding, the longer we're investing in the field of mental health, just how important our social relationships are to our well-being.
And so from the way you're talking about that, it sounds like you are actively investing in that as a, I don't want to reduce it to a coping mechanism, but it feels like there's something there. Does that sound right?
Try that again.
Like you're investing in community, both because you get the first order, like you feel better when you are in community, but it also feels like it's a active investment into resilience. Like if something happens or if you need support, you know, you can withdraw some of the community you banked.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting way of putting that. I hadn't really thought about it in terms of like protecting myself, but I think that I certainly feel a lot of gratitude for the level of social support I've had, and I'm mm-hmm. recognized very real. I'm very well aware that my high level of social support has been protective for me in traumatic events that I've experienced.
Yeah.
So I definitely benefit from that, but I also just believe in it. You know, if there's any part of me that feels like an activist or feels like, you know, someone who wants to make a difference in the world, it definitely comes from a place of wanting to invest in the communities that I'm a part of so that others can have that same kind of social support.
That's beautiful. So mm-hmm. in a world where you have limited resource, which we all do, 24 hours in a day and mm-hmm. money and energy and such, how do you choose where to invest? So if we, sorry, let me take half a step back.
Sure.
If we just kind of reached some sort of a conclusion that community is part of your purpose of life, I think that is true, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And then how do you choose which community or where to invest those resources? Like, how do you make choices around that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And that's the way I'm interpreting that is like, okay, so relationships are really important. But then when it comes down to you as an individual in your life, which relationships do you invest in? Because there's only so many people.
Yeah. And time is a zero sum game, right? The right. hour you're spending talking to me is an hour you're not spending with your family or your other communities or your partner. And right. so I'm extremely grateful that you're choosing to invest a little bit of time talking with me, which I always do when we spend time together. But I'm also aware that that comes at a cost, right? That comes at a social cost. This is yeah. an hour you're not investing in other relationships. Mm-hmm. And so at some point you made a choice where you looked at your calendar and went like, hey, I like Haya. This sounds like a weird harebrained idea of his. I'm going to say yes. But there was a thought process there. Maybe yeah. it wasn't as elaborate as I'm imagining, but, or maybe it was. I just kind of, I'm trying to think about, because what I'm realizing is that once you know who the I is, and once you know what your purpose in life is, the next step is choices, right? How mm-hmm. do you make decisions? How do you prioritize? And I guess mm. this is a very elaborate question that's trying to get me to that, which
is
a
great question.
How do you prioritize your time?
Well, and I'm hearing, I guess, in what you're saying is, okay, you're aware of your purpose. Now, how do you make choices to ensure that you're in acting in alignment with your purpose?
See, if I'd asked that, that would have been way more succinct. Can you do these interviews for me, please? Yes, that is exactly my question.
Okay. I think that's a great question. And I'll just say, as someone who does love people, it's been a lifelong journey because it's the place that I also struggle. As much as it is the place that I love and I thrive, setting boundaries for myself has been tough over my lifetime. That's where I struggle. Mm-hmm. And particularly in saying yes or no to other human beings. And where do I give my energy? And where do I invest in a way that's really going to serve me and my purpose? So I think I've grown a lot in that area over the years of being more discerning of the kinds of people that I want to spend time with.
Mm-hmm.
How willing I am to invest large amounts of time in supporting people who perhaps really need professional help
yeah.
more than a friend, you know, and that's
well,
tough.
Especially
for someone
as
like
you
me.
Are, as you are getting close to a boundary of being a mental health professional too, you know, there's a line now where, you know, some friends will come to you as friends and some friends right. will come to you as friends because you are a therapist.
Exactly.
Or somebody who is experienced in the worlds, in the worlds where these questions come up. And right. I see that a lot, you know, I experience that on the regular. And I feel like mm-hmm. that's where that goes to that exact question. It's like, where do you choose to invest is a great word. Where do you choose to invest that resource? And I think in particular, the resource of time. You can always make more money. You can always make new friends. Time is the one thing that's just ticking away.
Yeah. Well, my fiance is really like focused on time and focused on there not being enough time. And that's mm-hmm. actually not something that I feel. I'm feel like I have plenty of time. What mm-hmm. I struggle with is depth of energy, you know, like how I wish I had just endless energy to give. And I often push myself beyond what I really have as a mortal human being.
And I've seen you do that. Yeah.
Yes. The thing that I think it comes down for me, and I'm sure this is different for other people, but I've started to look and really become aware of and notice and honor the kinds of time investments that fill me up rather than drain me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a podcast with you where we're contributing our thoughts and ideas to the world totally fills me up. And so I'm a yes for that. There are some relationships in my life recently that I've decided to let go of because the time I've put into trying to connect and nurture and give to those relationships actually end up feeling really draining. So I think it's just a personal barometer of, am I willing to keep overstepping myself, or am I going to start respecting the inner cues that are telling me where I really need to be?
Yeah. Well, for me, the way that shows up is, I mean, I think I'm an introvert at heart. And when I'm spending time with one-to-one, it's pretty much neutral for me. But anything more than one-to-one, like one-to-two or in a group session, or worst of all, a party where I don't know a lot of people, it drains me. It really does. Yeah. And sometimes that is worthwhile, right? It's like one type of input is great. You know, people watching is fantastic. Having conversations with strangers about big and important things is wonderful. And I'm aware that once I've spent 2 hours in that space, I need to go and hide away and kind of be with myself for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think that works in a broader sense too, right? I have friendships that are, I know before I get on the phone with them that at the end of that conversation, I'm going to be drained.
Yeah.
Because, well, for all the dynamics we just talked about. And there's others where, I mean, I knew ahead of this podcast that halfway through I'd be bouncing and by the end I would be energized. And I think that is in part because it's super low stakes, right? If it turns out that neither of us had anything interesting to say about this, the worst case scenario is I get a conversation with a friend out of it. But the best case is maybe you say something that triggers something in me that sets off this whole cavalcade of thoughts and ideas and conversations with other people, and that may very well change my life. Some of the things you just said about love and how you invite love into your life, I'm going to spend some time with, because I've seen you do it and I see what that does for you. And I don't feel like I've really tapped into that yet. I don't know if that is part of my life's purpose or not, or my meaning of life. But the fact that that is so clear to you is something that is really, it turns me on. There's something in me that gets really warm for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that you're saying that, because that's the other thing I want to add is, I've been super hyper-focused most of my life on relationships. I observe people all the time. I've got this education around it. I love it. But being in close relationship with Luke, who's totally not focused on other people and relationships, he's focused on learning. You know, he really loves knowledge and cooking and kind of the pleasures of life. Mm-hmm. And it has invited me to step outside of my comfort zone, so to speak, and consider other avenues for meaning and other avenues for joy. And so for anyone who's listening to this, you know, lean into your purpose, lean into the things that bring you joy and meaning, but also consider that there are things out there that maybe you haven't tried yet that could expand who you are and how you think and how you be, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think there's kind of the dichotomy between hedonism and Spartacism, Spartanism, where you're like, on the one hand, it's like, okay, life is short, you know, enjoy it for what it's worth, drink with both hands and just fucking go for it, because that's all there is. And the other one is like, well, stark simplicity, like really paring everything down to the barest minimums. And I see deep beauty in both. I mean, I can't imagine what Spartan hedonism or hedonistic Spartanism would look like, but I do feel like there is something there where the way you're talking about Luke and the way you're talking about yourself, you're kind of on that, on kind of similar kind of, you're on a path together, right? You're both deeply in love. You're wonderful people together. And you have very different approaches to how to find that spark in life, which I think is really fascinating. And especially because I know, you know, you guys haven't had the easiest run, but you're very good at communicating about where the differences are and how to overcome those. And I think that is beautiful.
Thank you. Yes. And beyond just my personal relationship, I think that to have compassion for the fact that we all do approach this question differently, you know, like I'm excited to hear more of your episodes with other people, because, you know, you said, well, I observe this in you, Kate, but it's not really been me. I think that's wonderful. Like it makes me wonder, okay, so what's Haya's version of meaning of life? You know, I hope someone asks you that question, maybe at the end of the first season or something, and you get to really unpack that. But
since you asked the question,
yes,
the closest I've gotten to this is that the meaning of life is for the I to connect with another I. Now, I am very fuzzy about what my I is. I don't really know who I am. And the way that comes to life for me is that I really hate labels. But the other thing is, like, think about food, right? You make a beautiful meal that is lovingly prepared by your partner. You know, you eat it, you have a great time. That food that was outside your body becomes inside your body and becomes part of you, right? That gets turned into cells that get turned into, like, a tiny piece of that burger you ate will turn into a piece of your heart. Mm-hmm. It is undeniable, right? That piece of cow or that carrot or whatever becomes part of you. And then at the end of the life cycle, you know, you poop and it stops being part of you. Mm-hmm. Or the same happens with breath. You breathe in, chemical processes happen, and that breath becomes energy in your cells. Then you breathe out and it stops being part of you. I feel like the I is incredibly porous. Like, why, when I'm in deep connection with somebody, whether emotionally or sexually, I feel like the I becomes a we and the I disappears. The ego dissolves. That happens, you know, in lovemaking, that happens with psychedelics, that happens with just really close conversations. And I think that is really wonderful to me. And so my purpose of life feels to me like blurring those edges between, well, figuring out what the I is in the first place, but then blurring that edge. I am not interested in being a completely siloed island among other islands. I want to be in deep connection. Now, my challenge is that I am not very good at community. I like being a part of community. I like being in the periphery of community. I like being in a community with small, like-minded people who are focused on similar ideas or similar directions. But I'm not really good at sparking community and making community. And so for somebody like yourself, who you are good at that, I just find it really fascinating that in some ways what we do overlaps greatly, and in other ways they are so different but with similar outcomes. And I think this is why this was the thing that inspired me to start this podcast, right? Because I feel like there are so many things I can learn. And as I said at the top of this, people don't have these conversations. We've been pretty close friends for a long time. I've never asked you anything about this, which feels strange. But a lot of my other friends too, we never talk about this stuff. And I'm like, why? Why? We get to, we have time. We get to have these conversations. And, you know, give me half a bottle of whiskey and a fire pit and we can get pretty deep into this.
Yeah. Well, and I think the question, the meaning of life, there's as many answers as there are people, right?
Totally. Like,
and that's pretty magical. And
are you saying my podcast episode is going to top out at about 6 billion episodes?
Right. I'll root you on as you attempt
to. I'll keep going.
But I'm with you. I think that there's so much amazing gray area. There's so many ways that we are alike, and yet unique. And so exploring that, making room for that, we can inspire each other. I mean, I think one of the most amazing things about human beings is we can literally learn from other people through observation or conversation, right? And so we can be unique and we can still adapt and learn from each other. And I certainly feel like I've expanded my definition of who I am in being in relationship with you. And I think that's what you're describing, is like we impact one another, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a flow to that. And some of us are more rigid in who we are and what we're about. And some of us are way more open and fluid. And that's wonderful. Right?
When you just said that, something popped into my mind, which is that when I'm spending time with you energetically, Kate, you become a part of me.
Mm-hmm. That's
and I
what
think,
I heard you say.
Yeah. That had never occurred to me like that before, but that is true. That is totally true.
And I think that's one of your gifts, Haya. You know, I think that's not true for every human being, that they allow others to kind of infiltrate their psychic field, or however you want to describe that kind of merging of energy. There are some people who are very resistant to that, but you and I both, I think, are very open to that. And so there's a resonance there. And I'm not even saying one is better than the other. It's just a fascinating kind of aspect of who you are, I believe.
And that is relatively new to me, I think. I think daring to be open to that, because, I mean, like with any other kind of risk assessment, I mean, we've all gotten so good at risk assessment over COVID, but like with any other risk assessment, it is like zero risk doesn't exist. So there's always some risk. And so the question becomes, the non-zero risk I'm taking in taking this action or opening my heart or going out on the internet and asking the question of the meaning of life, is it worth the payoff? like, I haven't published any episodes. I don't know yet. But even in the 40 minutes we've been talking so far, I feel, yes, you've given me two nuggets that I really look forward to sitting with and thinking on, and that have slightly reshaped how I think about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, isn't that the most beautiful gift you could have possibly given me? Thank you, mm-hmm. Kate.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. And, you know, people say you go through life alone because you can never take anyone with you to the grave. And of course, there's some reality to that. But I also think that's misinformed, because most of us, if we have any kind of a healthy life, really have no idea what it is to be completely, entirely alone, and mm-hmm. for good reason, right? And I may not be with you past this episode, but you're with me in mm-hmm. the ways that you've touched me and influenced me and added ideas to my mind. We take all of that with us throughout our entire lives, and I would argue even into death. And so for me, it's comforting to actually see it the other way around, which is, look at all the people who impact us and yeah. are part of us, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like, as somebody who really leans into community, that is
right.
You're just hey, let's throw open this kimono, let's do this. Because I feel like, in order to be able to do that, you have to also be open to, like, being changed,
mm-hmm.
right? And say like the openness that you're showing in asking these questions, within that set of thoughts, there is a willingness to say, hey, you might say something that completely upends my life, right? And that is brave. That is a brave thing to be open for, especially when you feel a little bit settled. You feel okay. Like, are you really willing to unlock your door and see who walks through?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I want to be open to, not everyone is. Some people want to just play and not be changed and not grow and not self-reflect. And that is, I said to my mom on the phone this morning, we're all just silly people trying to survive, you know, like, so it's okay. And I think, yeah, along with love, growth is probably the second biggest meaning of life for me, is that evolution. Yeah.
And I guess the way you can reflect that in your life is that, you know, you cannot affect whether somebody is willing to grow or willing to accept love. But what you can do is choose to not, or you can modulate how much time those people get to spend in your life.
Yes.
And from what you were saying earlier, I feel like if you are working with somebody who is a massive energy drain, I feel like you're pouring all this energy into somebody who is not willing to make those changes. And at that point, it feels a little futile.
Yeah, well, and I've learned that I can be loving in my boundary around mm-hmm. how much time I spend, right? Like,
yeah.
I can say, okay, I've given what I can give, and I love you, and I'm going to send you off into the world, you know, and that is in of itself a loving act.
Yeah.
For both of us.
Totally. Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. So we're coming up to the end of our time. You mentioned death a couple of times, and I'm curious, do you have a firm feeling for what happens when you die, or what happens after mm-hmm. you die?
Meaning of afterlife?
Sure, why not?
Well, that could be a whole another podcast, I'm sure, but I'll yep. give you a small taste. I think my ideas of what happens after death has changed over time. And that's mm-hmm. probably been the most significant evolution that I've experienced in myself. I think mm. that people who are willing to look at themselves and the world at some point go through some kind of worldview shift. Mm. And my worldview shift has very much been related to death and what happens after death. So I'll tease you with that. But I think that for me lately, in this stage of my life, I'm far more interested in the life I create now than yes. I am in the life after death.
Yeah, totally. Tune back next week in our episode right? For life, the meaning of death. Yeah, no, I kind of didn't want to throw that question in, because it's kind of I feel like in the way we live our lives says a lot about how you think about death anyway. But it's an interesting that. It's a little bit front of mind for me, because I have experienced some death recently, and also because it is something that is very interesting to me in general. I'm a grief counselor, I'm a certified end-of-life coach, I ran a company in this space. I am above averagely interested in how people deal with end of life. But also, I also think it's often a red herring. I think it's a really, I think thinking about death and feeling into death is a really interesting lens at which to look at life at. It is not really that interesting to speculate too much into what happens after, because we'll never know, right? By the time you know what happens after you live, you can't really phone home and tell all your friends,
right?
As far as I know. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting train of thought. So the question I would love to end on, do you have some sort of a mantra or a guiding principle that helps you when you feel lost, when you feel like your life's purpose is kind of adrift?
Well, I have to say, one of the tokens I'm taking away from this conversation is your kind of highlighting and flagging, okay, you're aware of your life's purpose or meaning of life. How do you prioritize that?
What are you going to do about it?
Right. And, you know, I have to admit, I feel like I should spend some more time, really. I mean, I have goals and things like that that I'm focused on, but through that lens is a slightly different perspective of like, okay, yeah, I don't want to passively be living life to my purpose.
Right.
So I'm going to sit with that. But, you know, I think that, well, the mantra that came to mind is I am enough. And I'm not surprised that that's the mantra that came to mind, because a lot of times the driving reason that I'm focused on loving others is to feel loved myself.
Yes. Right?
That's the vulnerable space. And I really want to work on believing that I am enough, loving myself as I am, so that when I give love to others, it's from a full cup. It's from a full, genuine giving place.
Yeah.
Rather than in a desire for something in return.
Yeah, like a gift rather than a barter.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm human and we all...
What?
I know, shocking, right? we all use strategies to get our needs met. And but I want to be aware of that and responsible to that. And so my mantra is I am enough.
I love that. Mm-hmm. You are enough and you are so much more. Kate, I cannot wait for us to be able to spend time in real life again. A Me hug too. Is very long overdue.
Yes, and a hot tub, I hope.
a hug in a hot tub. Let's raise the stakes. Oh, this has been wonderful, Kate. Thank you for being a delightful interviewee. And I can't wait to get this episode live out to the world.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me for your inaugural episode. And
so exciting.
I can't wait to hear what other people report their important meaning of life thoughts. I can't wait to hear that.
Thank you.
Thank you.